Oliver Reed, the actor, and you were married, just ordinary married, you wouldn't like your wife to go out working and be the breadwinner of the family in any way?
No.
Why?
Because I believe in the position of man. I believe, you know, and this is an amazing place to be able to come over here in Ireland and talk about it, because, you know, either we're up at the pub or we're, you know, into your radio program, which I think Ireland is a very healthy place, and I believe your radio program is a very healthy place. I believe in exactly the same ways that Radio Caroline is a healthy place. I think that if we're going to donate our attitudes, then we should donate it in reality. And reality is such that you can't buy. And women you can buy. Women you can buy by giving them their housekeeping.
I think at that point we'll take a break for work.
Okay, we're talking to Oliver Reed of The Love Line. I'll be back with you in a second after the song. 6 minutes to midnight on the Loveline programme with Dave C until 2 o'clock. We've got a very special guest with us in the studio, Oliver Reed, together with Tony Allen and Tony Allen and Paul Downey. We're having a very nice intimate chat with Oliver Reed, and nice as always to have you with us in the studio. We had a call from a couple of people who want to know exactly what you're doing at the moment in the movie business. Are you recording?
No, I've just finished a film in Libya. I was in Libya, and I was landing myself in a desert, which is, you know, fairly obscure thing. And my mind was full of, and let alone, this is the truth, my mouth was full of blue bottles. And I didn't know how the blue bottles concluded that that's where they should be, except that, you know, maybe I'm a bit mouthy, or, you know, it's mouth and trousers. But I thought, why are all you blue bottles in my mouth? And why can't I breathe? Because every time I was going, trying to get some air, I had a mouth full of blue bottles. And I thought, if you weren't here, lying in the desert, with a mouth full of blue bottles, where would you prefer to be? And I thought, I'd prefer to be having a little grog with the lads. And I thought, where is that now? You know, in a sense of philosophy, the only place that you could ever be, the only manufactured sense that a drunk, and I'm a drunk, can be, is in Dublin, because you have so many people to play with. I'm not suggesting that I'm an alcoholic. I'm just saying, oh, I'm a drunk, and it's lovely. And if you're going to go on the road, okay, so in the morning you're either going to be piss proud, or you're going to be, you know, loud in the evening, or you're going to, you know, start waltzing with ladies, and you're going to say, I love you. Why not? And so I came to Dublin. And if I'm not in Dublin, Brendan said, I'm not even interested in the great lament. One of the attitudes of Dublin to me is the great Bosie laments. One of the Oscar Wilde was great, you know, who died in L'Hotel in Paris. And I went down there and I lay on the floor on a bunch of flowers. And they said, would you get out? Would you get out? And I said, Wilde died here. And the ducks are in your manufactured pond. Why should I get out? And they said, because it doesn't seem... I'm sorry, but I don't... They said, because, Monsieur... And I said, up your gee, sunshine. I said, I wish to slumber with my ladies in my love.
Very nice indeed. We're going to break for some more music right now. Thank you.
In the eastern
night in Dublin on ARD. That's Mike Batten, friends, and Run With The Wind. We're having a nice late night, laid back conversation now in the studio with Oliver Reed and Paul Downey and Tony Allen, who's going to come in here sometime and ask somebody a question. I'm sure he is. We were talking, Oliver, off the air about the fact that something I suppose a lot of people in Ireland wouldn't possibly relate to. You were saying that you are quite basically a shy person.
Very, very shy. And this is why I'm so anointed in my cause. I think that, you know, there are a lot of shy people. I mean, there are very few people in the world who are very shy. Sometimes you make a big mouth about your, you know, for instance, I am dyslexic. And I'm also very shy about my relationship with society. And society shames me sometimes because I don't know how to anoint it. I don't know sometimes how to face it. So in return for that shyness, I mouth it.
That's terribly interesting, really.
Oliver, can I just point
what
you
for
a second?
What can you say? Paul Downing.
The problem is about the love lines. Let's just talk about women for a second. What is your opinion of the ideal woman? What is she to you?
Well, you know, I think it's been fairly popularly pronounced in the press, and I don't wish to use three P's unless it has a purpose, and that's the fourth. I think that a woman should always be my slave.
Slave? Is that not a bit...
Of course. I don't believe that a woman is particularly happy. There's another P. Unless she is. I think that in return for that, I will look after her. I will buy her babies. I will pay the housekeeping. I will pay the rent. I will pay the rates. I will feed my children. And I expect her to kiss me every now and then. And in return, I expect her total dedication to me. Had it not been so, I would have told you.
Would that, in actual fact, term Oliver Reed as being a male chauvinist?
If indeed that is the way that society conjures up its imagination, yes.
But should women not have some kind of freedom of their own?
Well, hopefully, yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had my plonker.
Have you ever been in a position where you've met a chick, right, and you've fallen in love with her, and she's fallen in love with you, and the two of you have wanted to share something without any of the dominance either way?
Yes.
And was it good?
Very.
And is it possible?
It is always possible. You know, one of the great tragedies of life is that sometimes men, if you're going to be a chauvinist, and if you're going to be this, one of the great tragedies that a chauvinist has worn on his hat, along with a lot of pretty flowers and bells. I remember, you know, when I was making Oliver, I remember when Honor White was choreographing the whole thing, and I was playing Bill Sykes. I remember dancers coming to me, falling on their knees, and I said, "No, missus." And I stood up and gave them my hand, and my God, I gave them a glass of wine.
Do you, are you living on your own at the moment, or are you living with somebody, or what? Are you, whatever?
I'm not sure at the moment.
Sure.
No, I'm not sure at the moment. What I am is I'm in Dublin at the moment because, you know, Dublin is a lovely place for me to play. I come over, my son is half Irish. I married, you know, Kate, who came from Canal Street, and, you know, the family get very uptight about the fact because they say, Oliver is terribly dead. That, you know, and they assume that because I am proud of their heritage, that something is wrong about it, because you know, there are a lot of people, when they go abroad, that they're ashamed of their heritage. I am so proud of my Paddy son. He can't fight as well as I can.
Where did you get all your strength from? Is that in the family?
No, it's something to do with genetics. It's something to do with ejaculation. It's something to do with the purpose of my grandfather, who was Sir Herbert Birbemtree. My name is Birbemtree, not Reed. And when my granny met my grandfather, she kept on going to His Majesty's Theatre, that my grandfather owned. And she used to throw roses on the stage. And in the end, he said, he could hardly speak English. And he said, "Who is this giant S?" And they said, "That is May Pinney." And so he said, "Bring her on to my dressing room." And when she did turn up with her anointed counsel and her amazing attitude, he fell in love with her. And I suppose, conversely, it was the same aspect that she had. And we're talking, since this is an anointing time, at night when everybody's lying in bed and probably not talking too much, or nobody's got a date or a joint, that we're going to say, you know, what is love? 'Tis not hereafter. Present mirth hath that present laughter. And so she said, if you are a tree, I am but a broken reed, hence my name. I am the son of a bastard.
Oliver, do you believe in love at first sight?
I believe in aspects of walking into a room. I believe that sometimes, you know, when everybody's bringing in a bottle of VP and shoving it behind the curtains and putting a bottle of whiskey, you know, somewhere that's fairly secret, I believe that sometimes, I believe that sometimes you can meet somebody that is across the room and there's that little sparkle. And I think, I believe in that. And if that sparkle leads into a relationship, then I will forever applaud that.
You were talking about your son there. Your son was in the papers tonight, right? It's reported that in the normal media way, right, of which we are part, both of us.
All of us.
Like Mark is, what, 19 or 18 or 80s, late teens. And there's a lovely picture in the evening press tonight in Dublin with Mark and the lady across the road, as they described her, who is, what, 27 and his senior. And they said, you approve. Do you or don't you, and would you anyway?
I believe that it is incorrect for a father to contrive an attitude. I think that, you know, there are contrived attitudes. I believe this is why your program is on the air. I believe that there are contrived attitudes in society. I believe that, you know, society is going to say, okay, you're not allowed to make an observation which is not dictated by our society. As father, as a father, how can I stop my son loving her? And you should see her. She is very, very pretty, Claire. If I was to tell my son, listen, don't fall in love because she is 7 years your senior, or if he was to fall in love with somebody that was going to be, and it's difficult because, you know, he's 19 or 18 or 19 next birthday, if I was going to start dictating attitudes, I believe that the aspect of that dictatorial attitude will be subject only to the freedom of your radio station.
Okay, well, listen, we've got to that point. Then you said about society. To an extent, I'm with you on the fact that certain things in society are wrong. Do you wish to change them? And if so, how do we change them?
I don't believe that society, and a youthful society, with all its verbosity and all its newfound knowledge and all its understanding, and youth must never be questioned, because youth has an attitude, should ever be questioned in a manner that is going to dictate to itself. I believe that youth also has a manner of understanding. Otherwise, what purpose has our society? I was at Trinity last night, and I was thrilled. And we were talking about a paper last night at Trinity, why I'm a male chauvinist pig. And when I left, I lay in the gutter, and I said to the girls, walk across my chest. And I didn't. But they took me into a pub and bought me my beer.
We'll take some more music there. Thanks very much. 2 o'clock in the morning, and a very special and very honoured guest, Oliver Reed. And our phone lines are open to you at 743-435 or 747-969. And Oliver has put a very interesting proposition to, well, all the people of Dublin listening at the moment. If you ring in to these two numbers, 743-435 or 747-969, and give us one word, then the lucid tones of Mr. Reed will compose a poem around that same word. Give us one word, and Oliver will recite something very interesting around that word. 743-435 or 747-969. We're waiting on your call now. Very romantic indeed. Very lovely stuff there from Umberto Tozzi. We had a call from John O'Brien in Finglas, Oliver, and he mentioned the word forgot.
Forgot was a limpid lady I knew, and how I loved her. And forgot was the tree that I knew. Forgot was my garden and my grandpa. Forgot was my lady, and some of her limpid love. Forgot did I, forget her. Never her anointed soul forget those simple aspects, and that was fairly tart. Forget my lady, forget my love, never.
Very nice. Our phone lines are hopping at the moment, and there are more and more coming in. One more just handed to me, the word life.
Life is an aspect that I knew nothing of, and when I bludgeoned my nose and fell against that jar that was my papa, did I stumble, pick up my shoes, tie my laces, and make myself a fool? Of course.
Lovely. While we're waiting now on more words to come in for you, Paul wants to talk to you a little bit about the movies and the old movies and that. It's yours, Paul.
Thank you very much, Dave. Flashing back to some of your earlier films, do you look back at them and say, I could have done that better, or it wasn't right?
There is always a lament, in exactly the same way there is a lament about a past love affair. Had I known how I would behave at the age of 18, I would have been on my knees apologizing. One of the great aspects of growing old is a recognition of one's own ignorance. So I never lament my particular cause of youth, except that it's a recognition of my own ignorance.
Mm-hmm. One film which sticks out in my memory was you played the part of the wolf, the werewolf, was it? Was that difficult for you to play?
Well, I got £90 a week.
How did you get the part?
I played a fellow in a film when Hammer Films were in its embryo, and they used to be at Bray. Strange enough, it was called Bray Studios, and I know you have Bray down here and Ardmore, and Carmichael was the man, and Sir Harry, and they all got knighted. And they got a thing for industry, like a Duke of Edinburgh's award for industry. I was an aspect of that studio, along with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, that made it possible. I played in one film called The Tough Man, and it was in the two faces of Dr. Jekyll. That film was released. There was a man called Tony Hines, who was a producer for Hammer Films in those days, and they said, "Will you test?" And the only time I'd ever tested for a film, because I don't allow people to test me.
Why do you figure you're too good? I thought this is going back to the beginning. Do you figure you were too good for that?
I had a configuration about attitude in those days. Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course I did. In exactly the same way as that I assumed. Idealistically, that the one aspect of life was going to be that it was either James Dean or Marlon Brando or me. And in England at that time, there was no Marlon Brando or James Dean. And so I suggested to myself that it could be me, full of confidence. You've got to be.
Indeed, in some of your films, you play sort of a young, paranoid sometimes, youngster, teddy boy image. Was that the real you in parts as well?
No. It was contrived.
Contrived all the way. What kind of a childhood had you got?
Rather like a lot of childhood, full of happiness and hopes and sadness.
Mm. Is there anything you regret looking back that you should have done?
No, I just regret that I didn't have a little bit more happiness.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, the films that you're making at present, do you look for scripts or do people send them to you?
I look for my money. My bank manager looks for the scripts.
Mm-hmm. How many films a year do you make?
Three, two and a half. I mean, for this year, I worked in a film called The Lion of the Desert, which is produced by a man called Omar Mukhtar. And I worked for 1 year, this whole year, since February, early February, right until a month ago, making one film. I played General Graziani, which is a story of the Italian invasion of North Africa.
Mm-hmm. You have another film which is coming to town, actually, in the next couple of weeks, with Glenda Jackson. This is your third or fourth film with her, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Do you have a special affection for her?
A deep affection. Mm-hmm. Not only special, a deep affection for her. She is, as far as I'm concerned, and I haven't given her one, but what I have, I worked with her a lot. She is, it's an amazing experience for an actor to work with a talent, whether it be wrapped up in dresses or breasts. Mm-hmm. Or
do you find that it kind of rubs off? Two great characters playing together, it sparks off. between the two? Making a better performance?
I think that's what happens in every successful relationship in life.
Is there any person you'd like to act next to that you haven't so far?
No. No, I've worked with the best.
As I'm sure you have. As I'm sure you have. Oliver, we have two more names, two more words, beg your pardon, two more words that have been sent into us. One is from Thomas O'Reilly in Sallynoggin, and he wonders, could you do something with a name? His wife is working at the moment, and he's very much in love with her, and her name is Josephine.
Josephine, my God, when I knew you were the bills and those bluebells were, and when I walked in those limpid woods and knew you, my Josephine. And when I was a small boy and my heart was big and my mouth wanted you so much, did I lament one thing except of your work? Did I care, my sweet Josephine? Did I care? Yes, I did.
Absolutely lovely, lovely. And one more here. We had a call from Michael O'Brien in Beaumont, and he mentions the word still.
Still was like a pond. And when my friends sat there and made fools of themselves, I thought, watching that small purpose, that small moment where the strike comes. And when those trees fall as they do in those autumn lights, and I was still. And when I had one moment out of my pub where the jolly buckos played, and took my hand, and took those of my friends, did I stay watching that puck, my very, very small moment, still?
Marvellous. Thank you very much indeed. It's just gone 20 past 12 on ARD on the Love Line with Dave C and Oliver Reed and Paul Downey. And we have until half past 12 with Oliver. And we want to take two more names now, two more words, beg your pardon. Two more words. Give us a call, 743-435 or 747-969 with two more words. Thanks very much indeed.
And he's about to make love to a lady called Jill. He says, could you do a poem on the word bosom? Jill, when I knew you, and you were on the floor,
the spider crept, and I fell down and broke my crown, my sweet Jill. Is there some single moment in my life, my sweet thrill, my supposed beauty? And when I climbed up that hill again and met my Jill, did I not take her by the hand and lead her into the wonderland? Did I? Or did I not, my sweet thrill?
Damien, who rang in, wants to know about hell.
Hell hath no fury like that lady's scorn. Hell hath no fury like things that made for me a black. And when I fall, as I will, one day with my daddy and my mummy and my child, hell hath no fury. And when hell holds itself as it will, one day, I have no purpose, because for me those gates of heaven are brighter and made of pearl.
Pat in Drumcondra set us in one word. The word was called crime.
Cool.
Crime.
Crime has a fury. Crime. So smitten through the helm was he that he stood behind a bar and made himself so apparent that I was afeard. And when I saw crime, and in that particular passion, I saw shipwives climbing on those helms and made small purpose of my lament. But when crime came dancing and jigging through that floor and smiled at me in my face, did I turn? Of course I did.
We had a call from Sandra McCluskey, and she's living in Donnymead. And she's a regular listener to the program. And basically, this program, Oliver, deals with people who are particularly sensitive and lonely people. There's one word that she wants you very, very particularly to write to say something about. It's called loneliness.
There is no lonely in my love. There is no particular... I'm not going to recite a poem, because this is a sense of my philosophy. I don't believe that anybody should be lonely, because it is a particular aspect of my love that the dead do live through the living. Had it not been so, my granny would have gone a long time ago. I believe only, that if anybody is, you know, and at sometimes in the night, you say, where is he, or where is she? They're in your head, and I mean this particularly, because my grandfather, Tree, was a very great actor, and I sometimes lie in the bath early in the morning, and I am sometimes washed, and I suck the corner of my flannel, and I am anointed by every particular person that I know that are dancing in my head. And I don't believe, you know, people talk about afterlife or afterbirth. I tell you one thing that I am sure of, that the dead live through us. So, listen, if that's the lonely lady, turn over, cuddle your pillow, and look to your head.
The word love, as always, is ever omnipresent within your speeches and your talking.